This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Over the last year, industrial sand companies have been investing millions of dollars to start up frac sand mining companies in Texas, gearing up for what is expected to be a rush to extract oil in the Lone Star State. While sand mines in western Wisconsin are thought to produce the ideal sand for fracking, energy companies appear willing to accept a more inferior product to reduce the cost of shipping sand from the upper Midwest. WPR's Rich Kramer talked with frac sand industry experts about the rush to produce more sand in Texas and what it might mean for frac sand production in western Wisconsin. His guests include Samir Nangia, Director of Consulting for IHS Energy Insight, James Wickland, the Managing Director of Equity Research at Credit Suisse, and Rich Buttinger, the Vice President of Sand Operations with Fairmont Santrol.
I kind of want to get a taste of where the industry is at right now in terms of demand, busyness of companies. In 2014, the frac sand industry in Wisconsin, at least, was growing very fast and shipping as much sand as possible. But then everything changed. Oil prices crashed, and so did demand for sand coming out of Wisconsin and the rest of the country. The industry faced another tough couple of years. But 2017, things seem to be rebounding. So, Rich Buttinger, I'll start with you. What's happening on the ground in Wisconsin and elsewhere with regard to demand for your product?
Well, Wisconsin has recently seen an uptick, a return of quite a bit of business in the frac sand industry. You know, a lot of mines who had been that had been idled during 2016 or part of 2016 are running now. I'm not exactly sure if we've made a full recovery as the way that we were back in 2014 that you had highlighted quite a bit of growth in Wisconsin during the 2012, 13, and 14 years before we saw a downtick in the price per barrel. But yeah, we're coming back. We're coming back strong, and it's really a positive. You know, a lot of jobs are coming back, but you know, it's also important to say during the downturn, Rich, that you know there were plants, several plants that continued to run very, very strong throughout the downturn as well. And you know, whether that was continuing to supply frac sand or continuing to supply industrial and recreational products, frac sand is just one of the markets within the industrial sand industry. And you know, glass sand, foundry sands are two examples of other uses for the exact same sand that's going into the oil fields within Wisconsin. There's glass plants and foundries that are using the same exact sand. So that part of our business has been going very strong since the recession, 2009, 2010. That part of our business has been recovering very well. I'm not exactly sure if I could claim a full recovery on that business, but those markets are doing very well, and a lot of business is being done in Wisconsin.
Definitely worth mentioning, yeah. I mean, sand for golf courses, et cetera. The uses for the silica sand or industrial sand are many. So I'm glad you brought that up, Rich Buttinger. And I wanted to get Jim Wickland in on this. As far as the demand for sand, I mean, I had heard that the demand is beyond what is, you know, mines around the country are able to produce. Is that the case still? Are we seeing?
Well, at least for Rich, at least for oil and gas use for proppant and unconventional wells. You know, Rich is talking about industrial versus oil and gas. The recovery in oil and gas has just been stunning. The rig count was almost 2,000 rigs in 14, and today we're at 900 rigs, and sand demand is currently exceeding what sand demand was in 2014. It's the fastest growing subsegment of the oil and gas industry right now. And so, to Rich's point, I don't think the oil and gas business has made a full recovery yet, but the recovery that it's made has got demand eclipsing the record set in 14.
That is incredible. Samir Nangia, I mean, oil is still hovering around $50 a barrel. I checked this morning, and it's been there for some time. When we saw this demand, the demand for sand, equal to what we're seeing now, or actually less than, according to Jim Wicklund, the price of oil was like $100 a barrel or something like that. So how in the world are we seeing such a demand for sand when oil prices are relatively low?
Well, it turns out the more sand you put in these unconventional shale wells, the more oil comes out. And so if the cost of doubling the amount of sand results in doubling the amount of oil, then oil companies' returns are still significantly higher. So,
right,
if you can generate those kind of returns, then demand continues to go up. So we're expecting demand will set a new record in 2018.
Right. Hi guys, this is Samir.
Samir.
Along with that, what I would also like to say is that let's speak about how they're making a lot of money at $50 or $60 oil than they ever did at $100, and the big difference there, of course, being the cost of services, which had come down significantly during the downturn. Since then, they've been going up, but still, the cost of certain inputs, such as sand, are still not as high at the wellhead as it used to be in 2014. And then, as Jim said, there's also the increased productivity by either using more sand or simply better techniques, the land zone, et cetera. And as a result, what we're finding is that companies can break even in the Permian in the 40s today versus, you know, 50s, 70s in terms of dollars per barrel earlier.
Samir, we're having some trouble hearing you. I'm not sure if that's a technical difficulty on our end, but maybe if you could call in at 1-800-228-5615, we'll get you on a different line. There's more sand going into each well, and Jim Wicklund, I want to go back to you as far as how much are we talking about per well? I don't think a lot of people understand the sheer volume of what happens.
2 to 3 million pounds per well.
As compared to, you know, what was it back in 2014, or what was the normal?
A quarter of that. We have increased the frack intensity, is what it's called, but we've increased the amount of sand per well, per stage, per foot, in every criteria you can, and it's been a 300 to 400% increase since 2014.
Yeah, that's
like great. I say, it's the fastest growing part of the oilfield service businesses overall. But you're talking about, imagine a train, and you're sitting there at the railroad tracks, and you're watching a train with 100 cars of sand go by. We'll put that much sand in one well.
Wow. So, Rich Buttinger, the companies that you're supplying, I know that this is proprietary and you can't get into a lot of detail, but I know that there was a big push during the big rush for frac sand in Wisconsin to have plants be unit train capable, of course. And so has your customer base changed with this increased amount per well? I mean, do you have fewer customers buying more sand, or is it not that simple?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, the economics of our market, that particular market, has changed quite a bit. You know, kind of what Samir was alluding to was, you know, the industry downturn spawned a tremendous amount of innovation within the frac sand industry, within the oil and gas industry, and cost reductions not only on the service side, where they actually pump the sand down into the well and actually do the fracking that Jim was describing there, but also on the supply side, Wisconsin mining, other states as well. And then in between our customer and the mines, or in between the service customers who are actually applying the sand and the mines, is the logistics. So, you know, logistics is a tremendous component of our overall cost of delivery to our customer. And, you know, you could look at the overall cost, but in some regards, you could look at some rule of thumbs, it being anywhere between, 40 and 60% of the overall cost. To get it to the customer. So it could actually cost more to deliver the sand than it does to mine the sand. And so, yeah, unit train capabilities have, been a tool of innovation, a tool of cost reduction that Many mining companies, many sand mining companies, and logistics companies have been exercising, and it has been one of the several game changers within our industry. And you know, logistics costs, you know, being another topic of this program, Rich. I mean, you know, eliminating logistics costs or minimizing logistics costs, and actually getting to
Oh, my goodness. I think I just hung up on Rich Buttinger. Samir, are you there? I'm trying some new technology here, and it is not working. Samir, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. I just dialed back in.
I appreciate that, and I'm going to have to apologize and send a message to Rich Buttinger. But I've got a question. Where is the activity happening as far as... drilling activity? I'm hearing a lot about the Permian Basin in Texas, but is it happening elsewhere in the nation? I mean, are we seeing drilling happening in North Dakota or Pennsylvania?
Great question. So the Permian, again, is, you know, a bigger and bigger percentage of the overall drilling activity, right? So it started out maybe at 25-30% by something like 2014, and today it's already at 35%. And we have it increasing to something like 40% of the entire drilling activity by 2020. So obviously the Permian is going to account for the lion's share of drilling activity for any one particular play. But the Eagle Ford still continues to produce a lot of oil and, you know, still accounts for another 10-15%. As you said, the Bakken continues to roll on. And unlike earlier, when they used to use a lot of ceramic in the Bakken, they're using a lot of sand in the Bakken as well. And then, of course, you have the Marcellus, and again, that's very closely tied to natural gas prices, and a little bit of activity out west as well, but nothing that significant. And then, of course, the SCOOP and the STACK, which would again be around Oklahoma and the Texas border.
Okay, but definitely the majority is happening in Texas. Like, what percentage of the total demand for sand is going to the Permian?
We cut at roughly 35%. I think our
we would have said 35-40% somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
And keep in mind, Rich, that these Texas mines, and you mentioned 40 million tons being developed at the beginning of the show. And I think the latest number is up to something closer to 57 million tons.
Holy moly. Okay.
This is the sand that's going to be going to that fastest-growing and largest region, the Permian. And this is the key to the dynamic of what's happening in Wisconsin. Wisconsin won't lose its markets for the Northeast, Appalachia, the Marcellus, and the Utica. And it won't lose its markets for the Bakken. All those basins are increasing in activity. It's just that none of them are increasing at the rate and to the scale as the Permian, and that's where most of this new regional sand is being found.
Right, and if I could just take, you know, another cut at that, what I would say is that demand has roughly doubled, as you know, everyone talked about earlier, from last year. So, you know, let's say from roughly 40, 50 million tons last year to something like anywhere between 80 and 90 million tons. This is all short tons for this year, depending on whose forecast you're looking at. And the Permian accounts for a good chunk, maybe 40%. And so there's still growth in the other plays as well. And that definitely helps the Wisconsin frac sand industry as well.
Well, I want to get more into what this all means for Wisconsin a little bit later. But first, we've got a call from Willem in Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I just think that the viewpoint that I would like to represent isn't really represented by a panelist on your panel, but I'm just thinking of what this means for Wisconsin in terms of your guests are very excited, obviously, about the profits of the oil and gas industry, and with our current administration and their hell-bent to deregulate the industry, I'm concerned about what this means to the environment in Wisconsin, reclamation of mines once they're tapped out, the fact that once these hills and other mining sites are gone, they're irreplaceable. And especially I want to address this to young people. How much of our Wisconsin, the beauty that was handed to us by our grandparents and our elders, how much of that are we willing to sacrifice for the greed of the oil and gas industry, for people who don't live here, for one thing? And as far as employment goes, I feel that frac sand mining is good for the oil and gas industry, but it's bad for every other industry. There's no one that wants to live near these sites, so housing takes a big hit. There's other industries that don't want to locate near sand mines, like a plastics factory in Bloomer that decided not to build because they were concerned about the air quality. Continued lessening of regulations like water discharge into our lakes and streams. So there is a high cost to pay and an irreversible cost to pay for Wisconsin the way that we think of it. And to do this all for to tap the last bit of carbon from the earth when almost all the scientists, 99% of the scientists, say that burning carbon is contributing to climate change, which it already is in places like the North Pole and the South Pole and other areas. And how much of this are we going to, like, ride it out? Are we going to destroy everything we have to the bitter end so that the oil and gas industry can reap profits? I think it's immoral, and I think we owe something to future generations, not to burn up the earth.
Hear you loud and clear, Willem. I want to get that question to one of our panelists. First, Rich Buttinger, are you there?
Yeah, I'm back, Rich.
Okay,
thanks.
Sorry about hanging up on you there.
No problem.
I'm juggling a lot of phone calls here, and I've pushed the wrong button. So Willem just called. There's a lot of people, and Lord knows we heard a lot of concerned citizens when the industry in Wisconsin started building up between 2010 and 2014. Every town hall meeting that discussed industrial sand had a number of concerned citizens. So now people like Willem are wondering what happens after. I mean, the reclamation of mines has always been an issue. But with the thought of some of the business being, some of the market being overtaken by Texas, there are concerns that companies will go out of business or just abandon their mines. Is that the sort of thing that you see happening?
Well, I think I'll address the concerns about the latter question, right? So the, you know, potential for abandonment, I don't see that, Rich, and Willem brings up a great point on, you know, what happens if a mine does shut down. And so I could just kind of explain, go through that process very, very briefly.
Yeah, please do.
And, you know, we're an industry that is not new in Wisconsin. You know, you could date industrial sand mining and non-metallic mining back to the early parts of the 1900s and even before then, you know, late 1800s. I mean, when you look at sand and it's always been used in foundries, hasn't always been used in frac sand, but, you know, glass manufacturing, you know, as long as glass has been manufactured and metal parts have been poured into a cast, that's been a huge use of sand, you know, for many, many hundreds of years. In Wisconsin itself, you know, we're very strictly regulated by the Wisconsin DNR for clean air, clean water. You know, the DNR is the delegated authority for the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. We're very strictly regulated. There is enforcement for industries, not just non-metallic mining, industrial sand, but anybody who violates any of those laws or regulations, you know, there's enforcement activity that has been documented for those violations, and specifically in industrial sand, there's been some regulatory action that the DNR has exercised over the last few years. I think the one issue that is separating industrial sand mining from a lot of other industries is the growth of our industry. It's not to say that we're not regulated. We're very strictly regulated. It's the growth that has drawn many concerns, and how we deal with that. There's been a lot of conversations in the past, and there will be many more to come on how we manage growth of an industry. But overall, it's a very positive thing. It brings economic development. It brings jobs, and it brings a lot of growth into local areas. Not only just through jobs of the mining itself, but manufacturing, supplying equipment, consulting, engineering, professional services as well. Getting to the specific topic concerned Willem's reclamation. So part of the strict regulation that industrial sand mining, non-metallic mining is under is regulation to reclaim property. Not all the site is active at once. There's only a small percentage of the actual property that's actually being mined, and therefore reclamation happens right behind that mining activity as the mine goes through the property and mines the mineral on the property. So what may have been a ridge in the past is now going to be a lower profile, but the end land use is a collaboration between, you know, local government and the DNR, whether that's going to be used for agriculture or used for industrial purposes. Say an industrial park is going to be built on site, and reclamation needs to abide by certain standards and address certain concerns for stormwater and that sort of thing, which is all part of the regulation. So if a mine does close for whatever reason, whether that's a quarry, aggregate mine, or industrial sand mine, there is regulations, and the companies are held accountable to reclaim that property to the regulation, to the agreement that they went into as part of the permit process, and ties back to NR 150, the regulation for reclamation, and companies are held accountable for that, and that's part of the DNR's strict regulation of our industry in Wisconsin.
And over the next 2 years, 11 new sand mines, at least in Texas, are scheduled to open. We're talking about what it means for Wisconsin's sand mining industry. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by Sameer Nangia. He is Director of Consulting with IHS Energy Insight. Jim Wickland is Director of Equity Research for Credit Suisse. And Rich Buttinger is Vice President of Sand Operations with Fairmont Santrol. So I want to talk about the Texas sand mines. I mean, I had heard of the term, and I guess I'll go to Sameer. I've heard of the term brown sand, or we've heard of Texas sand. It's not a new thing. How long has it been around as far as a source of proppant?
Probably, I mean, as far back as I can remember, as far as the industry is concerned. So, yeah, people have been using sand from the Brady sand mines around Boca, Texas, mm-hmm. for a very long time.
And so it's not a new thing, but when were they using that in the past versus using sand from the Midwest or sand from Missouri or sand from wherever?
And that's a great question. So I think even though people have been aware of all of these different sand formations Texas, including the ones around Monahans, which is the one that they're using for the Permian today, for the most part, they were considered inferior quality and therefore not used for fracking, especially of horizontal wells, right? So we've obviously had activity going on in the Permian for a long time. A lot of those wells were extremely shallow, and you could afford to use sand that crushes at a lower strength, such as the sand from Brady. And then, of course, when horizontal fracking came along, people were under the impression that if you're going 10,000 feet below the ground, and then, of course, you have laterals that also go, 8 to 10,000 feet today, it made sense to get basically sand that had a crush strength which was higher. So just, some basis for comparison being that depending on the mesh size, Northern white sand could go anywhere between 5K and 11K, some might argue even higher for the 100 mesh, and a lot of the Brady brown sand might be, between 3K and 7K, and again, some of it can go a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sand that is being mined today in the Permian is sand that is at least in terms of crush strength, a little bit inferior in terms of its quality. But the good news about it is that everyone's looking for a lot of fine mesh sand, and it seems that these deposits around the Monahans have a lot of that. And the crush strength is fit for purpose, which is another way of saying that it's lower than northern white sand, sometimes by a big number, but it works in some of the wells, and we are seeing good results.
Samir Nangia is the director of consulting for IHS Energy Insight. He spoke with WPR's Rich Kramer about the future productivity of frac sand mines in western Wisconsin, given an apparent shift in the industry as demand for industrial sand picks up. He's also joined by Rich Buttinger of Fairmont Santrol and James Wickland of Credit Suisse. Coming up, Rich Kramer continues the discussion about the future of Western Wisconsin's frac sand industry. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. In the last decade, there's been a lot of interest in western Wisconsin about the expansion of frac sand mines and the environmental and health risks they pose. While the industry has struggled in recent years as demand for oil has slowed, there is evidence that it's ramping up again and that sand mines in the upper Midwest are facing competition from the state of Texas. WPR's Rich Kramer sat down this week with a group of industrial sand industry experts to talk about the economic future of Wisconsin frac sand mines. They include Rich Buttinger, the Vice President of Sand Operations with Fairmont Santrol, Samir Nangia, the Director of Consulting for IHS Energy Insight, and James Wickland, the Managing Director of Equity Research at Credit Suisse. Here's more of that interview.
And Jim Wickland, you and I were chatting about the use of finer sand. There's basically kind of, I don't know if it's newer, but it sounds like newer techniques being used, at least as far as I am concerned, where they're using, they're able to get the sand deeper into the cracks if they're using this finer stuff from Texas. Am I off?
Correct.
On that?
Well, and it's not just from Texas. It's 100 mesh.
Okay.
Okay. And that refers to the grain size. And typically we've used 2030 or 4070, which is still the most popular. But several years ago, EOG, which is considered the technology thought leader in the E&P business, mm-hmm. started testing with finer mesh sand. And when you think about it, it's easier to make an emulsion with a really finer flour or sugar or salt than it is rock salt or wheat flour.
Sure.
You're trying to make an emulsion and keep the sand suspended in the fluid as long as you can because you have to deliver it, like Amir says, 10,000 feet down and 10,000 feet out. And so it was decided we needed to start using finer mesh, 100 mesh sand, at least in the toe, the very end of the well, and maybe the entire well. And as Samir said, that the Texas mines have a much larger percentage of the 100 mesh than the Wisconsin mines, and it's good enough. And so now we appear to have a bifurcated market. 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 100 mesh was basically considered a waste product, right?
Mm-hmm.
And today it's been the fastest growing demand mesh size, even though 4070 still has a bit of a premium. So it's shaping up to be somewhat of a bifurcated market. Now, Rich knows this a whole lot better than me, but that 4070 is, it will still come probably predominantly for a while from Wisconsin, and the 100 mesh demand will primarily be met from Texas. Rich, does that sound close to right?
Well, I mean, time will tell on that. You know, as far as the use of the 100 mesh that's going to be mined in West Texas within the premium, and I emphasize going to be mined and used, you know, not a whole lot of data, not a whole lot of information, you know, is coming back from the oil fields yet. So, you know, time will tell. We'll anticipate, you know, that information coming back, that feedback. I believe, you know, a lot of the mines that are there are going to be planning on starting late this year and early next year. So mm-hmm. time will tell on that. But I will emphasize that the 100 mesh, that particular product that's also being mined at many other areas,
It's not of a better quality. I think Samir had talked about, you know, the crush strength. So it is there is a trade-off to that sand. It is local sand, but it's not as high a quality, meaning strength wise, as some of the sands coming out of the northern white, what we call a tier one, you know, facility. So, you know, we'll understand a lot more after we get some feedback. But I think, you know, overall, I mean, as a supplier within the industry, you know, we're looking forward to supplying products to our customers and, you know, getting that feedback and continuing to offer a low cost solution to their business model and our business model. I don't know how much that's going to impact Wisconsin, if at all. I think either Jim or Samir was talking about the Bakken and you know, as oil prices continue to, you know, go up and back return back into the 50s, maybe that's when, you know, sand start, you know, oil rig counts start increasing in other basins. But, you know, this area that we're talking about in Texas is a small percentage of the overall basins. It happens to be a large percentage of drilling. But as we see oil prices rebound, we may see many other shale plays, shale deposits start back up, and rig counts increase in those areas. Which will, you know, some of them may require coarser sands, or some of them may require you know, finer sands. But, you know, it's important to know Wisconsin, the position of Wisconsin, and our neighboring states as well. But, you know, I'm all about Wisconsin on this phone call, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, logistically, we cover, you know, all the railroads. We have access to terminals on the Canadian Pacific, the Canadian National, the Union Pacific, the Burlington Northern, Santa Fe. You know, these are railroads that are accessing all shale plays, all basins within North America, and, you know, not just the United States. We're talking about Canada, and we're talking about Mexico. So Wisconsin is positioned very well in the market long term, short term, long term. We've been mining sands and supplying frac sands to all the basins for many, many decades, and we will continue to do that for many, many decades to come.
With regard,
and I'm sure Fairmont Well is a fabulous company, but the thing to keep in mind here is that cost matters. And the oil industry, which has lost billions of dollars, and I was going to mention to the gentleman before, about 88% of the sand use in the U.S. is done by independent oil and gas companies, not major oil companies. And these are companies that have lost billions over the last several years. So their greed is trying to get back to break even. And so cost really matters. And I can deliver Texas sand to a Texas well site at about $50 a ton less than that same ton of sand would cost to be delivered from Wisconsin. And that's going to be the biggest economic issue with Wisconsin sand going forward.
And Rich Buttinger, transportation costs, I mean, you have access to all these plays via the rail, but, I mean, then you have to pay the rail lines in order to ship your product. Couldn't that put Wisconsin at a disadvantage?
Well, you know, disadvantage into one particular area, possibly.
Sure.
But, you know, as Wisconsin continues to grow, and I'm wearing two hats here, Rich. I'm wearing my Fairmont hat, and I'm wearing my Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association hat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we continue, you know, as a company and also a member of WESA, you know, to supply silica products in general. So, you know, we're looking at continuing to, you know, grow our business, grow it responsibly, continuing to have the conversation about our industry with our local communities and at the state level, managing our growth. We do continue to see growth in Wisconsin, and I think it may be a balance of, you know, sand in Texas taking on a lot of that growth percentage, but overall the percentage of growth with our industry, there's still enough growth for many other states, including Wisconsin, to continue to supply silica into the oil and gas field. So, you know, like I said before, I mean, time will tell. And, you know, it's an exciting story in Wisconsin, has been for a long time, and will continue to be an exciting story. And I think, you know, the number of jobs and the number of dollars coming into the state from this activity and, you know, going back to Willem's concerns about, you know, the mining that goes on within the state. I mean, the state was based on mining and logging and use of natural resources, but it's important to note that it has to be done responsibly. And there is existing regulations to manage our industry in Wisconsin very, very appropriately. And, you know, that will continue. And we will continue to have a positive impact on Wisconsin.
Joining me this hour is Director of Equity Research for Credit Suisse, Jim Wicklund, Director of Consulting for IHS Energy Insight, Samir Nangit, and Vice President of Sand Operations for Fairmont Santral, Rich Bunninger. I just wanted to get back into the discussion about Texas sand mines. And Rich Bunninger brought up an interesting point, and I think it's worth exploring a little bit, that these mines that are being planned are literally in the planning stages right now. There is 11 that I remember hearing about, possible sand mines. Samir Nangia, you and I talked before about whether or not all of these mines would come to fruition. Is that still a question?
Yes, absolutely. I think in terms of proposals, now we are up to close to 60 million tons. But as you said, roughly 11 of them are already in construction. So typically, you know, when mines enter the construction phase, most of them get completed, albeit some with delays. But then anything beyond that would be a matter of seeing how everything shakes out. And I would actually like to just spend 1 minute framing the demand discussion, right?
Sure.
The demand discussion being that, yes, it's cheaper, and a lot of people seem to believe that it's fit for purpose. But with that said, there's also a lot of people on the sidelines waiting to see what the well results look like in terms of production a year or two down the line. Because unfortunately, that is the issue with lower crush strength sand, that it can impact hydrocarbon production in the tail. And I believe that debate is not entirely settled just yet. So therein, you know, lies the demand question that you know, at least for the first few mines, there were people lining up to sign contracts. And those mines are being built with contracts for 6 months to a year, which would then, you know, allow these mine owners to go ahead and finish the construction and also get some return. But for the mines that are coming online after the first five or six, they have to be confident that the demand will be there. So again, you know, that question of demand becomes an important one.
We've got another caller this morning, and this one's coming from Elk Mound. Caller, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to, I'm sorry I turned in late, but, you know, I was listening to them talking about the, you know, doing mining responsibly. And I have two comments about that. One, and they were also talking about being regulated. We have seen the research that about the regulation that DNR has done in the last while, which is really, there has been very few enforcements of violations. And I can give you an example locally of responsibility. There is a proposed sand mine in our area. And when they came in, they dug boreholes and then didn't fill them. They did get fined. DNR followed up and did get fined. So it seems disingenuous they talk about mining responsibly when our local experience has not been responsible. So two concerns: what is responsibility, and then secondly, DNR has not been enforcing as they would suggest has been happening.
All right, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. Rich Bunninger, I guess I'll go back to you on this one. I know that WISA is a charter organization for industrial sand mines. You don't cover the entire industry. So what do you say to the caller?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we have a percentage of the industry in Wisconsin as part of the association. And so our primary goal is to promote responsible operations. And we do that a number of different ways. You know, we partner with the DNR and discuss challenges and you know, talk about our industry and the growth, I think has been the primary challenge. But we also explore other opportunities for regulation that would promote more responsible operations. And right now, I mean, we go through the regulations, and as the caller said, that particular, whether it was a mining company or a drilling company or consulting company, usually a mining company, if they're interested in developing an operation, they'll hire a drilling company, or maybe even they'll do it themselves. But the caller had even identified that they had drilled without backfilling the holes or grouting the holes, and they were held accountable. I mean, there was some enforcement action there. So any of the issues that are going on with industrial sand mining and violating regulations, if somebody has a concern or has an issue, I would urge them to call the Department of Natural Resources or even the local counties, the county office, if there is in particular some zoning that zoning is regulating the use of the land, not necessarily the air and the water and some of the other environmental concerns that are out there and strictly regulated. So in that case, I mean, the caller gave an example of irresponsible action, but she also gave an example of enforcement action. So that's what we've been seeing, over the last several years. And unfortunately, if there is a irresponsible operation or somebody does violate a particular regulation, we're confident as an industry and we're confident as an association that, there is a regulation, there will be enforcement action brought upon that company by the appropriate regulatory agency.
With that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Wisconsin, according to our experts here, Wisconsin is suited for, at least right now, a big percentage of the sand that would be going to the Permian Basin could be coming from the local mines in Texas, which would hurt market share in Wisconsin. But Jim Weckland, I'm just wondering what has to happen in terms of oil prices or just the industry in general to see energy companies start producing more in other plays like the Bakken.
Well, it's the rising tide lifts all boats, but the Permian Basin is so much more economic. It has so many layers that a single well on the surface can produce.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the same thing with natural gas in 2008. We had 2,000 drilling rigs operating across the United States drilling wells. Today, gas production has been up every year, and we have 140.
Whoa.
And so each location is dramatically more efficient and productive in the Permian Basin. And so while the rising tide of oil prices will lift all boats, if oil were to go to 60, activity would go up in every basin, but it would still go up the most in the Permian.
And Rich Buttinger, I wanted to ask you, because I'm going to just rattle off some of the companies that have a presence in Wisconsin that have also announced plans or have begun on work to develop sand mines in Texas. They include High Crush Proppants, U.S. Silica, Uniman, and Emerge Energy, and Fairmont Santral. So what can you tell us about your company's decision to locate in Texas? Is this something that the companies that need to adapt to?
Well, I think some of the companies that have been in this industry for a long time, that's nothing new to our business model. I mean, we have a presence and have had a presence in Boca, Texas, as Samir had mentioned before. Mining sand for oil and gas, frac sand in Texas is nothing new. It's been going on for many, many decades. We have a presence there as well, as in Minnesota, Northern Illinois, Missouri. We have many, many mines in many locations. And it's just part of our business model to continue to expand our operations and service our customers and deliver the lowest cost sand. So we don't see increasing operations in one state over another being detrimental to that other state. We just see it as overall growth within our industry, and we're very positive about it. We don't see any adverse impact to our existing operations. Now, you'll have to speak to each individual company to get their feedback on that, but you know, overall, I mean, we're very positive that this is a growth opportunity for us, the same way we've been growing in other states outside of Wisconsin. But you know, we've also been growing inside of Wisconsin as well. So, you know, we're going to continue to look forward to that. And you know, it's site specific, it's product specific, it's quality specific. So, you know, until we get the data, like Samir had brought up, until we get the data back, we're not necessarily sure, you know, what kind of overall impact this is going to have in the Permian itself. But I think the impact is going to be Permian specific. I don't believe that it's going to reach up into the other markets. You know, give you an example. You know, after we announced our operation in the Permian, we also started up an operation in Minnesota that had been idled for over a year. So we're seeing continued growth, continued market share, you know, across all of our operations, and this is a growth opportunity.
All right. With that, let's see here. I'm running out. Oh, I've got questions about with regard to Texas. I mean, I spoke with Ken Severson, who is he's a consultant with the frac sand industry. He's also the head of the geology department at UW Eau Claire, and he was talking about potential bottlenecks, potential issues in Texas that could kind of stifle the growth down there. And I, Jim Wicklin, I'll go to you on this. This fellow, Kent Severson, was talking about a lot of the mines are clustered in a specific area, and they're going to the same place, and the amount of truck traffic could be substantial. So I'm just wondering, could that cause a bottleneck by itself? And also, could Texas see what we saw in Wisconsin, which was a big uprising of people that were opposed to the sand mining industry, and or at least concerned about it, pushing for more regulations and succeeding to some extent?
Well, there's no question that there are a number of approval processes that have to go through opening a mine in Texas. We have a very strenuous, as has been said, we've had sand mines for a long time, so we've had regulations in place. Where most of these mines are being developed in Texas, which is Winkler County, which is West Texas, is one of the most sparsely populated parts of the state.
Okay.
And it's you know, a couple of counties covered by nothing but sand. Most all of the companies that have announced a sand mine have done a great deal of research, making sure that the mines they're going to develop are located very near freeway or a highway access.
Okay.
And so will there be bottlenecks? Of course. Trucking rates have gone up as much as 40% in some instances since the recovery started. If you can pass a drug test and have a commercial driver's license, you can get a good job in Texas today. And so there'll be some bottlenecks, but I don't see them being any significant bottlenecks, with the possible exception of the dune sage lizard.
Right.
The dune sage lizard isn't an endangered species in Texas yet, but their home turf is centered around Winkler County, and there's growing concern out there that while a lot of these mines have come to agreements with the state on how to develop them correctly and keeping an eye on the dune sage lizard, that's still a potential liability that may be the biggest issue that hits the sand business this year.
Samir Anangia, we've got less than a minute. We're talking about quality, and we keep hearing we don't have the data yet. You were telling me about some kind of a conference where there's going to be some release of information about data on Texas sand. Is that correct?
That is correct. So in a couple of weeks, we have a frac sand conference coming up. I forget off the top of my head what the name is, but it's organized by Pete Cook, and I believe there'll be a lot of data on the actual crush strength of the different kinds of sand. And the only other thing that I would say about the bottlenecks in Texas itself is that there's one highway, I-20, where you've got both rail and you've got trucks going by. Now, the biggest bottlenecks are around the big cities. Conveniently, these sand mines are located away from the big cities, but still an increase in trucking traffic definitely bothers people living around there. So it helps that these areas are sparsely populated, but then you got to move people there. Labor's more expensive, and then, of course, there are issues with an increase in traffic.
Samir Nangia, the Director of Consulting for IHS Energy Insight, James Wicklund, the Managing Director of Equity Research at Credit Suisse, and Rich Buttinger, the Vice President of Sand Operations with Fairmont Santrol. They spoke with WPR's Rich Kramer about the future of Western Wisconsin frac sand mining industry, which appears to be rebounding after a couple of years of depression, but is also facing new competition from sand mines in Texas. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers. We'll be right back.